America's premier facility treating veterans and NFL athletes for brain injury and PTSD picks Jacksonville for expansion. And a beloved local athlete and former NFL star is serving as the outreach effort's public face. The exclusive news just ahead. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9, and now never miss a show. Subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, we have the exclusive story as former NFL quarterback Mark Brunell leads this major expansion of the renowned Eisenhower Center into Jacksonville, treating veterans and NFL athletes with PTSD and traumatic brain injury. Citizens will be treated here, too. Anyone who has these issues, and you can get on the line now with your questions at 549-2937. Also this morning, dive deep under the North Florida beaches in the new film Sunken Conservation. We'll have a preview of this new film. It premieres tonight on WJCT television. Then later, Sesame Street star Sonia Manzano. Plus, The Spectator with some ideas for your weekend. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, one of the premier facilities in America treating veterans and NFL players for traumatic brain injury and other issues has chosen Jacksonville as its location to expand into the southeast. The renowned Eisenhower Center, based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, settled on North Florida for expansion because of our area's international recognition as a destination for medical excellence with unparalleled resources to make a difference in the lives of veterans, athletes, first responders, or any citizen with brain injury or PTSD. Now, Eisenhower has chosen a beloved former NFL player to serve as the public face of this expansion. It's former Jaguars quarterback Mark Brunell. With more on this exclusive story, we welcome John Kornack, CEO of the Eisenhower Center. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And also with us, former NFL quarterback Mark Brunell, now ESPN commentator and football coach for the Episcopal School of Jacksonville. First time on the program, and it's a pleasure to have you.
Great to be here, Melissa. Thanks for having me and John.
Now, Mark will provide national, regional, and local outreach. He'll represent the NFL Players Association and be a spokesperson for this initiative in Florida. We'll have all the details on that, and we'll go to your calls in just a few minutes. Call into the show as we discuss this major expansion of the Eisenhower Center into the southeast in Jacksonville. The number to join us, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us, or you can weigh in on Facebook. Let's begin with the CEO, John Kornack. You are CEO of this renowned facility up in Michigan. Very exciting news for Jacksonville. How did you come to settle on the First Coast for your location to expand under this part of the country?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll make it quick because this is radio. what happened is we've been looking to come down to Florida for quite a while, and we're doing another service up in Michigan on the actually Selfridge Air Force Base. We'll have the first rehab center on an Air Force Base, so we're really excited about that. But while we're talking to the Ambit Group, they said, what would you think about Florida? And I said, well, we have always thought about Florida. We want to come down here. We want to have a warmer climate, the NFL and the veterans. There's a large population of veterans down here. And if you're going to help somebody, you got to come to where they are. You don't ask them to always come to you. These are people who need help. So they said Jacksonville, and about a week before, I had just moved my daughter down here and my son-in-law with my two grandkids.
Oh, really? So yeah. That helped sweeten the deal.
To Riverside, I said, hey. I'm extremely ecstatic about it now.
Wow.
So Jacksonville, we came down, we really looked at centers down here. We haven't made our decision exactly where we want to be yet, but we really like the Jacksonville area.
And you will be building a standalone facility in this area?
We will either be taking one over or building it from ground up, yes.
Can't say where yet, though.
No.
The number to join us, 549-2937. Of course, as you mentioned, the Ambit Foundation, instrumental in this. They establish residential rehab facilities for brain injury patients, working with veterans, working with athletes. Mark Brunell, you'll be the public face of this effort. And as John said, veterans who suffer from PTSD or traumatic brain injury will be treated, but so will former NFL athletes. And
yes,
that's become a very newsworthy subject lately.
Melissa, it really has, and I think since the movie The Concussion has come out, it's brought a lot of awareness to a subject that is has been, at least for NFL players, former NFL players, at the forefront because it's a real issue. There are a lot of former players that live in the Jacksonville area that are going through and having some issues right now as far as brain injury. And so it's certainly a big topic. There's a lot of need out there. There's a lot of players that need care, not only the former players, but vets. And I'm thrilled to be a part of this, to be part of the Eisenhower Center and the Ambit Foundation, two groups that are very much interested in simply getting care to those that are in need.
Now, you'll represent the NFL Players Association in this effort. What's their stake in all this?
Well, you know, the job of the NFLPA, it's our union. And they do a very good job in fighting for players' rights, for their benefits, and most importantly, really providing care, pointing them in the direction to make sure that, you know, after these guys get done playing, they have they're provided the care and the whatever's necessary for them to live long, healthy lives. There's a lot of players, former NFL players, that are suffering right now. They are in bad shape, and a lot of these guys, Melissa, they really don't know where to go. But there are a lot of options for them. The NFL, the NFLPA, groups like the Eisenhower Center. There are multiple groups that really care about these guys and their families, and doing everything they can to get them the help they need.
It's your chance to connect with former NFL quarterback Mark Brunell. He is the public face of the Eisenhower's expansion into Jacksonville, treating veterans and athletes. We'll go to the phones in a moment at 549-2937 with your questions. So, John Cornack, tell us a little bit more about why the Eisenhower Center's model of care is so renowned, because not only do you treat former NFL players who have had all sorts of issues with brain injury, you treat veterans coming back from particularly Iraq and Afghanistan who suffer from PTSD and other issues.
Well, our true strength is we're neurobehavioral. So we have always taken on the hardest cases in the country. So where other centers can fail, they do a nice job. There's some great centers here in the state of Florida already. But we take the cases that are difficult. So they have many behavioral issues. And when you look at the media and you look at the NFL players, the ones getting in trouble, they're having behaviors from their head traumas or from their concussions, and they can't really control all of that. You know, you have to understand how the brain works. And so we've been doing it for 28 years. Mm-hmm. So we have a long history. Michigan's a very strong state for traumatic brain injury and for concussion and the related neurobehavioral. So when you get 28 years, it's easy to kind of say, let's make this happen in other places. Let's help the veterans who are coming out of the wars. Because in the past, when they came out of the war and they had traumatic brain injuries, they'd die. I mean, they wouldn't make it off the field of combat. Now they're making it off the field, and now we have to help them when they return. So
they come back so broken, and they struggle so much.
Right. Well, and what we're trying to really emphasize is they come back still whole. We have to make sure that we show people who they are and how whole they truly are versus always going back and saying, let's help someone with a disability. What we want them to do is understand their new path and understand that's a whole life that we're gonna help rebuild for them. So,
and you know, Mark Brunell, as the NFL, as players in the NFL have gotten bigger and bigger, the danger for players has gotten bigger and bigger. We've just seen this explosion of brain injury, players committing suicide, players having just a parade of really horribles, all manner of problems. And it really did come to a head, as you said, with the release of that Will Smith film. I think that broke it open to a really wide audience. When you mentioned that there were players right here in Jacksonville who are struggling, I'm sure these are friends of yours, maybe former colleagues of yours. This has to have been just so difficult emotionally for you to watch some of your former buddies go through this. And do you feel lucky that you didn't suffer this yourself?
Well, I'm fortunate. Now, in my NFL career, I had probably 8 or 9 concussions, but. You know, there's a lot of former Jaguars, a lot of former NFL players, you know, and we do our best to get together as much as we can. And we talk about these issues, Melissa. We talk, you know, how you feeling? How's your head? How's your body? You know, what's going on? And a lot of guys are talking about how they're starting to feel some symptoms. And honestly, Melissa, there are some guys that you actually don't have to, you know, listen to him. You can watch them. You can talk to him and understand that some guys are slowing down. They're not mentally where they were when they were playing or even just, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So there are guys. So this is very personal for me because some of my friends, you know, are struggling with you know, brain issues right now. And but it's not only but that. It's where it's going, you know. And this may be a center down the road that some of my teammates may need to get health care in. Mm-hmm. They might need to be patients there at some point. That's where this could go. God forbid that should happen. But listen, a lot of these guys, they played 8, 9, 10 years, suffered a lot of different, had a number of head injuries over that time because back when we played, it wasn't monitored as closely. There wasn't a concussion protocol. You didn't go into a program. There wasn't a set timetable as far as when you can return. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, a concussion, you come to the sidelines, doctors check you out, and they throw you back in there. That's just kind of the way it was.
Right.
We have come a long way. The NFL has come a long way as far as taking care of these players, not only the current players, but the former players. And there's a lot of good people out there that are doing some good things. Will this ever go away? Listen, there's probably always going to be head injuries in football. Unfortunately, it is a dangerous, it is a very aggressive physical game, and guys are going to get dinged in the head. They're going to have issues. But what's important is that we make sure that we're looking out not only for the NFL players, but our young kids as well that are playing the sport.
And we want to hear from moms, dads, veterans, and anyone who has a question for former NFL quarterback, now Episcopal football coach Mark Brunell, and John Kornack, CEO of the Eisenhower Center, as they expand into Jacksonville to treat veterans and athletes. We'll go to the phones in a moment at 549-2937. And let's get back to the issue of PTSD for a minute, John, because we've spoken to so many veterans in this area who struggle with that. As you mentioned, this is a veteran-friendly area, and a lot of people choose to retire here after finishing their military service. So this is such an important issue for so many listeners.
Yeah, you have a large population of veterans and people retiring here. And well, you should. It's just a beautiful area. We've been to the beaches already. We've done all the things that you would do if just to visit. And it's impressed us. And the people coming back with PTS, what happens is they lose their memory, attention. There's so many pieces of their life that they're having time struggling with. Just, you know, sleeping up at night with night sweats and nightmares. And it's just they need that help just to get through those moments. And it might be a psychologist, psychiatrist. It might be just anyone who works at the center. And I think where we have a unique center is everyone touches a life. If you're, doesn't matter what your job you have with us, we never know who's going to make that path for us to help them through recovery. So we're a center that's holistic. We're everyone plays a role, and it means that if someone can break through with any player or any veteran, mm-hmm. It might be the food service person, it might be the housekeeper. Hopefully, you know, we'll also have all the clinicians you can possibly imagine, but we believe everyone at the center plays a role, and that's one of our strengths.
Let's go now to Robert in Nassau County. Hi, Robert. Good morning.
Hi. I'm a former Navy veteran. I'm really excited about what y'all are doing, and I'm just curious about what type of volunteer opportunities you may have with your organization.
Oh, well, we like volunteers. That's always nice. Of course, we like to also pay folks, but we love volunteers, and the reason we like it is because you may have experienced some of the same issues. And so there's strength in numbers when it comes to PTS and things of that sort. And what we mean by that is it's going to take groups of people that say, I have a related issue. Here's how I dealt with it. The reason the power between, we have a NFL player with a veteran going through recovery together. And the reason we do that is because it kind of sets the table that let's do this as a team, because both sets are used to teams. So an NFL player does everything as a team, and a veteran does everything as a team. So the volunteers will be asked to be that same thing, is come in, help us, help them understand. Hopefully you take as much away as the person living here. And because we're going to have shorter periods of time here, so we really want to impact them. And by impacting them, we need volunteers who have a clear understanding. So we appreciate your volunteering up here, Robert.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. The number to join is 549-2937. And you can't reveal yet where you'll be sited, but can you give us a little bit of inside information about how people can get in touch with you? What's the timetable for this expansion effort?
Well, we've already gone to your state, and we've looked for, we have to get our licensures and all that cleared. We have to get a medical directors and stuff like that. So if medical directors would like to call in, we'd be happy to talk to you. You can get a hold of us by afterTheImpact.com. So you can get online, and it's called After the Impact, and there's a lot of information there. And you can just call our office, or you can get a hold of Mark's group or the Ambit group, and that will hook you up with us.
I have a number here, John. It's 904 476-9099.
476-9099.
Any questions or any way you'd be interested in helping the Eisenhower Center, the Ambit Foundation, call that number. We'd love to hear from you.
That's the number to learn more about this. And we did get a couple of calls from people that hung up. They were afraid to say their comment on the air just because the issues around the NFL and concussion, I guess, are they're still rather controversial. But one mom did hang up, but she left her question for me to say out loud. And here it is. With the amount of injuries that happen in football, is it time to think about stopping football programs in elementary and middle schools? What about that, Mark Brunel?
It's a great question. It is a very valid question. I have a son. He's 17 years old. He absolutely loves football. I'm his coach. He's my quarterback at the Episcopal School of Jacksonville. And I have the same concerns about the game of football. Every time he takes the field, I get nervous because the kids he's playing against, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster. And he's the quarterback, and he's already had a couple concussions. It's a valid concern. I will say from a personal experience, and there are countless guys that would say the same thing. Yes, it is a dangerous sport. Injuries do happen. It's an unfortunate, it's the worst part of the game. But for me, a lot of my teammates, it's worth the risk playing tackle football for me in high school, college, and then going forward. I learned so many valuable life lessons through the game of football that I just didn't learn anywhere else, honestly. The importance of teamwork and working hard to achieve a goal, overcoming adversity, when things get tough, just locking arms with the people around you to accomplish a goal. Those are lessons I learned at a very young age that have lasted me throughout my lifetime. Now, I will say for grade school kids, for middle school kids, high school kids, it's a big decision on whether to play tackle football. And if there's a young man that has any hesitation, any concerns, or any fears about playing this game, he probably shouldn't do it. There's so many 7-on-7 programs. There's so many different sports that he can play. I would never, never say that football needs to go. I never will, because it's an incredible sport. It's a sport with risk, but I think we're making strides as far as looking out for the safety of our young man. I know we do that at the Episcopal School of Jacksonville. At the first sight of a kid getting hit in the head and just, he's off the field and he's done for a week, 2 weeks, depending on the severity of the injury, of course. But football is up to each family, each kid, each parent to decide whether that's a sport that they want to participate in. And I completely respect any mom or dad or child that would choose not to play this sport. But I also understand that the sport football it changed my life, and I'm forever grateful for the sport.
Yeah, and I think a lot of parents feel the same way Mark does, John. It has been said in recent months that if enough moms decide they don't want their sons playing Pop Warner football, professional football as a sport is not going to be as popular at a certain point as it is today.
And let's remember that football's been football for a long time, and the equipment started when my father played for Michigan State. He had a leather helmet on. And so it's evolving, and what I like about what's evolving now are the rules. Where
yes,
the doctors are on the sideline. People are paying attention. If you're even waving a little bit, they take you off the field. A lot of this happened because that didn't used to be the case. So I think what we really need to do is take a step back and say, what are the steps we're putting in play? What are those protections for the children? What are the protections for the NCAA players? What are the protections for the NFL players? And how is that going to affect this in the long run? And I think what we're going to find out is it's going to help a great deal. Right now everyone's saying, oh, everyone's got a head trauma that's an NFL football player. That is just not true. But because it's an easy thing to say about the movie and concussion, it's about the same number of folks. So what happens is you could get the same head injury just riding a bike down the street. So let's not overblow it, and let's remember we love the sports. It helps a lot of kids grow, and even if they don't make it to the NFL, it helps them get through the college. It helps them get through their high school. It helps them find a bond that in many times these kids would have struggled to try to find friends. So there's a lot of value out there for football, and we just don't want to throw it away just because it can be a pretty damaging sport at times.
Well, it's a major announcement, and we're so grateful to both of you gentlemen for sharing it with us first this morning on the program. As the Eisenhower Center picks Jacksonville, along with the important work of the Ambit Foundation setting this up, the Eisenhower Center expanding into the Southeast here in Jacksonville. Mark Brunel is serving as the public face of this effort, and look at our website later today for more details. We'll also have the podcast of this program up later today. John Kornack, CEO of the Eisenhower Center, Mark Brunel, Episcopal coach and ESPN analyst, former NFL quarterback here on the program. Guys, it's been a pleasure, and thank you so much for being with us.
Enjoyed it, Melissa. Thank you.
Thank you for having us, Jacksonville.
And much more still ahead later. Sesame Street star Sonia Manzano joins the show. Find out about her special event here at WJCT Studios tonight. But up next, we go diving under the North Florida shores in the fascinating new film, Sunken Conservation. That's in a moment.
Business is booming for America's temp agencies, but some workers are more equal than others.
They would ask for things like, we need country boys.
Or a person must have a corporate style, and those sorts of codes would be used to indicate send only white applicants.
To see this happening in America, it's insane. It's mind-boggling.
On the next reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
The Florida Legislature is in session, and Capitol Report is your nightly connection to what's happening in Tallahassee as lawmakers debate and decide issues that affect all Floridians, such as expanding health care and gambling, protecting the state's water resources, private versus public schools, and prison reform. Hear Capitol Report each weeknight during the legislative session on this Florida Public Radio station.
That's Tuesday through Friday nights at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Greetings and a happy new year to all.
Join us Saturday for Swamp Radio's New Year's celebration, recorded live at the Florida Theater, featuring songs, stories, sketches, and conversations which celebrate Northeast Florida's arts and culture scene. Swamp Radio, Saturday at 4 on 89.9 WJCT.
Even in tough economic times, there are many local stories of success. I'm Karen Mathis with the Daily Record. On First Coast Success, I speak with Northeast Florida business executives and entrepreneurs about their experiences and accomplishments. Hear the interviews the last Monday of each month on First Coast Connect or on demand at wjctnews.org.
Brought to you in part by Iberia Bank.
Welcome back. Dive under the North Florida shores and go exploring with a look at how marine conservation efforts are being implemented in this area, from new habitat creation to cutting-edge science involving invasive species beneath the waves. The new documentary, Sunken Conservation, premieres tonight on WJCT Television. Producer Joe Kistel joins us now with a peek inside tonight's show and some cutting-edge camera work. Joe, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is really exciting because when you go to the beach, you know, you don't often think about what's underneath there, but you took some cameras down below and found some really incredible stuff. Tell us a little bit about this story.
Well, I've been diving for several years. We do marine conservation work offshore, and I like to talk to people about the dives that we have. And it's funny, when I tell most people about diving offshore Jacksonville, a lot of times they look confused, and they'll actually ask me, you can dive off Jacksonville, almost as if they have this preconceived notion that it's not an option, that there's no life. So the original motivation was to change it, to show people the diversity of marine life offshore North Florida. So that was the original push for it, and that's what we wanted to do. The second thing is we wanted to show that the habitats we have are important to our environment and our economy. Mm-hmm. So we built the show as a series of conservation stories of what's being done offshore North Florida, and we think it's important.
This is the first program of its kind shown on local television showcasing these kind of underwater environments here on the First Coast. And you use not only the latest camera technologies, but unique filming techniques, high-definition imagery, to show what normally only deep sea divers see. What will TV viewers tonight who tune in be able to see?
Well, they're going to see stuff that's never been seen before. Typically, when you see an underwater production on like an IMAX film or something like that, you're going to see production crews that went over to these really clear waters in the Pacific, for example. When you look at offshore Florida, most of our water is not that clear, so it's very challenging from a production standpoint. So what we've actually fine-tuned kind of by trial and error over the years is camera technology that actually works well with unique filming technique to basically film in low-light conditions and make an image that's very engaging. So we've taken the underwater world here and make it look very similar to these productions you see that are done in the Pacific and the Keys and those kind of things.
Very exciting. And were you holding the camera yourself?
Yeah, did a lot of the filming myself, and another gentleman, Larry Davis, is one of our filmmakers as well.
Run into any trouble? I mean, it can be hazardous doing that stuff at that. How deep were you?
Most of our filming was done anywhere from 60 to 110 feet.
Wow.
It took over years to do it, so we had different encounters here and there, but never anything that was what I considered us in jeopardy. We did see sharks and things like that. But
what sea creatures will people see? What are some of the most spectacular ones?
Gosh, I like them all, but one of the things I really want people to pay attention to, and this may not sound like the sexy option, but is the invertebrate life that grows in the structure offshore. And what's important about that, the invertebrate life is actually what supports the whole marine food chain, basically. Whatever grows on that structure is a food source and a shelter source for other fish and things like that. So basically, little fish will munch on the growth, and then bigger fish will munch on those fish and so on up the food chain. So that's what I really want people to focus on, to see we have this sponge and these corals offshore Jacksonville that are very colorful, and they're supporting this whole marine food chain. But then you're going to see your things like your turtles and your big fish and your food fish, your groupers and your snapper and all those amazing things.
And some invasive species too, right?
Yes, unfortunately, we have a big series. A part of the story is about invasive lionfish, which is actually a beautiful fish, but it's very problematic. And it's not just a Northeast Florida problem. It's the entire state. It's the entire Western Atlantic and the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico. We have some unique research being done at University of North Florida, so we talk about that in the show. And we show the harvesting and removal efforts up here and how there's an encouragement to turn this invasive species into a food demand.
What do you like about diving?
You know, everything. Well, a lot of it is, even though I've been doing it so much, is you always see something new. There's always this mystery. What are you going to see next? What's around the next corner? What's the little thing that's going to be under that sponge or coral head? It's just amazing. I can't say that enough.
It has to be a thrill to be able to show what you see to a wide audience.
Yeah, that's...
Because it's a hidden world.
It really is. And the average person, even the people that live here, don't have a clue. It's just right off our beach here. And it's this amazing thing. And I encourage people to take advantage, to go out, if you know, fish or dive or whatever, and enjoy. We have the offer here. I mean, a lot of people are, but a lot of people aren't. So it's an amazing thing.
Well, kudos. I know how hard it is to make a film. A documentary is no easy task. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
It is the premiere of Sunken Conservation, a new documentary looking at just what's beneath the waves right offshore here in North Florida. Tune in tonight and catch the world premiere of this fascinating new film tonight at 8:30 p.m. on WJCT Television. And in a moment, The Spectator with your weekend plans, plus artist Ambler Hutchinson as her new exhibit debuts this week, plus Sesame Street star Sonia Manzano still to come.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
President Obama says he wants every student to have access to a quality computer science class. What might that look like?
Getting their heart to sing because it was their creation and they built something that was never built before. That's the most exciting time in a young student's computer science career is when they finally finish their first project and want to just shout to the rooftop, but this is mine.
Building a better computing class later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Hitler's manifesto Mein Kampf is being published in Germany for the first time since it was banned at the end of World War II. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Peter Ross Range, author of the new book 1924, The Year That Made Hitler. It was the year Hitler wrote Mein Kampf while in prison after a failed attempt to seize power in Munich. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, local artist Ambler Hutchinson's much-anticipated solo exhibit opens this Friday at the Florida Mining Gallery. In this haunting work, Ambler takes the audience on a visual journey through the dark corners of her mind, where the depression and anxiety she struggled with finds a catharsis in art. Ambler Hutchinson, good morning.
Good morning.
So this is called Visual Artifacts Part 2, One Mind, Two Realities, and it depicts your struggle of living with mental illness. I've heard such great things about it.
Oh, thank you.
Tell us about this, and you took what so many people struggle with and turned it into some really powerful artwork.
Thank you. I have been making work for years, and it's a way of me dealing with my depression and anxiety. It's the main outlet for me, and what I found is I had all this body of work that I had collected over the years and just kept putting away in flat files or storing them. And the more I looked through it, I realized I have a story to share. I just wasn't comfortable in sharing it up until this point.
What changed that?
I remember it as when I was young and I started to not feel really good. I would always look at my parents' art collection and art books that they had, and I was always drawn to images such as Frida Kahlo or Sally Mann, images of people sharing an internal struggle, and that I always got comfort from that. And so I thought maybe with mine, I can give a visual voice for this internal experience that I know people go through, but often you can't see see it in a
you
person.
You wanted to give it a visual imprint.
Yes.
And your mixed media, you use everything from paint to photography, sculpture, found objects. And when it comes to mental illness, this is something that as much of a struggle as it is, it seems as though the catharsis of your art has enabled you in some way to triumph over mental illness. Is that a fair way to describe this, or is it an ongoing struggle?
I would say it's an ongoing thing, but art for me is a way of staying afloat and processing these experiences, and it definitely is something that makes my life better. I can't imagine not doing art as a way of processing these experiences.
And you take found objects that, honestly, I would never think of and to turn into art. What inspires your process? How do you take some random object? What draws you to one object and not another one and inspires you to make it into something beautiful?
I've always been drawn to things, whether they're man-made or natural, that have are in the process of decay or falling apart or discarded. And I think I have some intuitive recognition with them. And so I love to take these different parts and put them together in a new context and kind of tell my internal story and kind of make them come alive again.
And as people walk through the exhibit, it starts with very light images, and as they progress through, the work gets much darker. And as they come out at the end, there's hopeful, more uplifting images and work at the end. So there's a whole arc, isn't there?
Yes, it's meant to be a visual journey from starting with, quote, being normal, meaning not depressed, and going into a crippling depression, but coming out and finding hope.
And that's where you are now, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's great. That's exciting.
Yes. Thank you.
And it's exciting that you're debuting this tomorrow night at the Florida Mining Gallery. That's on Shad Road, with the reception kicking off at 6 o'clock.
Yes. And I also will be having a resource room available for people. My sponsors are there, Joseph Care, OCD, Jacksonville, and Tape South, as well as United Way and Baptist Health.
That's important to note, because Baptist Health, United Way, and the others you mentioned have made such an effort in improving the system of care for mental and behavioral health in this area.
Yes.
So it's exciting to see them championing this effort, because this is another way that we can bring attention and awareness.
Right.
So she is artist Ambler Hutchinson, and her exhibit debuts Friday night at the Florida Mining Gallery. That's at 5300 Shad Road. This exhibit is called Visual Artifacts Part 2, One Mind, Two Realities. Go out and see this, because it's really powerful work. Ambler, a pleasure, and thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
In a moment, The Spectator plus Sesame Street star Sonia Manzano. Stay with us.
Billionaires. Everyone wants to be one, and Showtime is trying to bring us a little closer.
We've been long fascinated by billionaires, by what it means to be a self-made billionaire. Because to us, they're American kings, they're oligarchs.
I'm Molly Wood. Who needs $1 billion anyway? Next time on Marketplace from APM.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
I'm Christian McBride. On the next Jazz Night in America, the father of striped piano, James P. Johnson, will dig into the James P. Collection in Newark and then head to Dizzy's for a solo piano set from Aaron Deal, Ethan Iverson, Mark Carey, Elu, and many others. Check it out on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Any hotheads in your hood?
People really want law enforcement to protect them from gang members, from terrorist attacks. But sometimes we don't want to give law enforcement the tools that are needed to do that.
Cops in Fresno using big data look at making a reliable threat index for citizens in real time. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International. Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Well, Well, she has affected the lives of millions ever since the early 1970s as the actress who defined the role of Maria on the acclaimed television series Sesame Street. Sonia Manzano has won 15 Emmy Awards for her television work, and she's also an acclaimed author, among other things. Manzano will talk about her amazing career and the importance of arts education for every child at a special event tonight here at WJCT Studios. She joins us now with a preview, and it's such a pleasure to meet you. Good morning.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure for me to be here. And I just want to clarify that I did leave, retired from Sesame Street about a year ago, because 44 years was a long enough time to wait for Oscar the Grouch to propose.
44 years. Yes, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah,
that is incredible.
So it was a wonderful, incredible run, and television has changed, and the country has changed.
It really has. And, of course, you will be talking about that tonight. Despite all of the changes that have occurred, all the positive changes, you're going to be highlighting how important it is that we increase access to quality education in the arts, particularly for children that might be in schools that are low income, and particularly for non-white households.
Yes, I think it's very important. We've gone on this bandwagon of science, 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 and we're forgetting all of the creative arts. And creative arts are what makes children think outside of the box and come up with their own ideas. And we have to encourage that kind of thinking in order for them to do well in the sciences and the math, etc.
Now, when you began on Sesame Street, it was the early 70s, and there weren't a lot of Hispanic women on television in those days.
No, I was the first, and it had a very special meaning for me because I'm Puerto Rican, and I was born in New York in the 50s and watched a lot of television, a lot of stuff you see on TV Land, Father Knows Best, Leave It to Beaver, and a really weird show called Queen for a Day.
I remember.
You
oh,
remember
yeah, I remember that
show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well,
sure.
It really affected me, and I wondered where I fit into this society that didn't reflect me at all.
Yeah.
So I'm thrilled that I grew up and Sesame Street wanted to remedy that very thing for other Latino kids and hired me so I could be a role model and someone that they could relate to.
What a role model you've been, too. 44 years. And for so many little girls, for so many little kids, to see themselves reflected on television every day.
And I hear about it. Since my retirement from the show, I've gotten a lot of mail from people who have said, if it hadn't been for you, I wouldn't have gone into broadcast. If you comforted me. I was in a tumultuous household, and when I saw Sesame Street and I saw you, I felt there was some hope for me. So it's been Sesame Street has been a great thing for me.
That is so wonderful. And Sesame Street, of course, we broadcast that program right here on WJCT Television. When you speak tonight at this event, it's Arts Education Lift Every Voice is the name of this event. Arts is so often the first subject to be cut when schools are looking at budget cuts. There isn't enough public art in neighborhoods or on school campuses. You're going to be talking about the importance of lawmakers working harder to provide more access to quality arts education. Because the data is there. When arts education is in the schools, kids do better, and the return on investment is considerable.
Yes, it is. I think that people are quick to take art away from the children's programming in school is because we've become a data-driven society, and we want to be able to count things. We want to count beans. So if you can't test a kid on an art project, we don't know if it has any value.
Right.
I think that that's a reason that we're shunning away from art, and that's unfortunate.
It is, voices like yours are so important to this dialogue, and I'm sure there's so much excitement. People really want to meet you.
I love meeting new people, and I love telling them about my experience and how art put me on a higher plane, and I know that art can save a lot of children in difficult situations.
Yeah, and so come on out. I'm not sure if this is sold out or not. It probably is, but visit our website to be sure, because thanks to the work of Any Given Child Jacks and Cathedral Arts Project, Sesame Street star Sonia Manzano speaks tonight at a special VIP reception and keynote presentation in our studios. Arts Education, Lift Every Voice, tonight at WJCT. The program begins at 7 o'clock, and we will film this and edit this for television. We'll air this on television later in the year in case you can't come out and meet you in person. So that's good.
Well, yeah, but I hope you can.
Yes. Visit WJCT.org if you want to. Here in Jacksonville, people have a way of making decisions at the last minute to go to things. So I'm sure that there will be some visits to WJCT.org to visit and come out to our studios to meet Sonia Manzano, a 44-year run on Sesame Street. Just incredible. Such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Again, that's tonight. And finally, this hour, lots of choices coming up for this weekend. Here as she is every Thursday to take us all around town, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the maestro of merriment, thespectator.com's Carrie Speckman here today.
Yay!
And you had a birthday last week.
Yes, I did.
Happy birthday.
29.
Again. So, Sonia Manzano here on the show today.
First of all, I have so many things to say. Like, I did not know she was going to be here.
She's here today. We had Mark Brunell here today.
Oscar
the Grouch.
Anybody who knows me knows I love Oscar.
Yes, yes.
And can I just interject a funny Mark Brunell story?
You can.
I interviewed him for Jacksonville Magazine, and our schedules didn't work out, so I had to do it by email. And one of the last questions I asked was, because his email is Hotmail.
Uh-huh.
And I said, do people give you grief about having a Hotmail account? And he said, is there something wrong with that? Is that a bad thing?
Oh, that's mean.
Well, I have AOL, so I get.
Oh, well, but you get grief about that?
Oh, all the time.
Oh, my.
So
if it's not email, it's no good? Is that the new thing?
Apparently, I've had it for 15 years. What am I supposed to do?
You're just not going to switch.
No, I'm not. I'm loyal.
You're loyal. And that's a good quality, Spectator.
Thank you very much.
Wish more people had it.
Thank you.
Okay, so we talked about Ambler Hutchinson's event.
Yeah, my whole list has already been
I already went
about.
Through the list. I'm so sorry. I stole all your thunder.
That's all
right. Well, let's move on to Friday's Martin Luther King breakfast at the Prime Osborne Center.
Yes.
Mayor Lenny Curry will be there, along with
Tamika Hughes
from Action News and Shannon Ogden. They'll be emceeing this big event.
Yes, and it's put on by the city, and they have a breakfast, and they have a keynote speaker, which they have not named yet, an inspirational keynote speaker. They haven't named it yet. And fun fact, it's his birthday tomorrow.
Yes, yeah. And we will be celebrating
on his actual birthday
on Monday. Now, also Friday at UNF Peace Plaza, they'll have a celebration. So that'll be happening as well. And of course, Monday, lots of people off from work and school. And then Saturday, internationally respected artist Constantine Demopoulos. Is
yes.
that right? The Blue Trees.
They'll
be installing his work in Hemming Park over the weekend. That sounds
yes,
really interesting.
Yes, they're taking four small trees, and they're coloring them with all-natural blue dye, and they're going to be on display, I guess you would say, in Hemming. And then they're going to be donated for planting around the city.
Very nice.
And people can help paint the trees.
Okay, now the other day, or actually yesterday on the show, we spoke with Jazz Night in America, who's Christian McBride.
Stealing my thunder for the third time.
Tell us about him.
He is apparently one of the most important and omnipresent,
ooh,
which a word you not, it wasn't my word, figures in jazz. For 20 years, he's played with Herbie Hancock, Pat Metheny. He's also arranged for Isaac Hayes, Chaka Khan, Sting, James Brown.
That's right.
He's 20 years in the biz. He's a legend.
He'll be
at the Ritz Theater on Saturday.
That's right. And you can get your tickets at WJCT.org for Christian McBride at the Ritz Theater. That's going to be a great evening of jazz. So much going on around.
I know.
Lots of famous names hopping
so
around town
things.
This weekend.
Speaking of which, the CW show Supernatural, it's been on for 11. It celebrates its 11th year. But apparently it's that
long running.
Yes.
That's like unheard of today.
There is an official, I think Sesame Street probably has it.
44 years, yeah.
A lot.
They've beat. They're at the top of the pyramid.
They're having official supernatural convention. So if you are a fan, like there's all kinds of stars from the show, panels, you can meet them, autographs, the whole nine. It's Saturday and Sunday at the Hyatt Regency.
Oh, very nice.
I have one more story I'd like to interject. I don't know if you. I'm sure you've listened to Al Letson's podcast.
Yes, Airthang.
I believe the Earth thing. I believe the first one he talked about having a crush on Maria.
No.
Yes, he did.
No.
Did you know that,
Sonia?
Oh, well, everybody has a crush on Maria. I thought we all knew that.
Yeah, he was like talking about how she was one of his first crushes.
Oh, I'm going to have to send him a little text that I got to meet her.
Don't think that won't be reported. It will be reported.
That's very nice. Very nice.
It's not often that I get one over on the great Al Letson. Like, that's not,
I
that's
know.
A rare
well,
event.
Well, but it's
for
out
me.
There in public.
I mean, you know, Al's like, you know, a big time
He's
guy.
Al.
So this is exciting for me.
I'm going to
have to let Al know that I met Maria.
Yes.
This
we'll
is
have
very
to take
exciting.
A picture.
Yes.
And post it.
Yes.
And tag him.
Yes.
Even though I usually don't like taking pictures.
Let's get
that
a selfie
a
with some. I know. You're the selfie queen.
Yes.
Did you get a selfie with
Not
Mark?
Yet. Not yet.
Did you get a selfie with Mark Brunell?
No, I missed him.
Oh, I didn't get one either. But we'll get one with Sonia.
Oh,
very
yeah.
good.
Okay.
Very good.
And what a star-studded hour it's been. Thanks so much. Go to thespectator.com for the full list of weekend events. No shortage of fun things to do.
Correct.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchuk. Never miss a program. Subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, the second biggest coal producer in the U.S., just filed for bankruptcy, the latest sign of a declining industry, one facing plummeting energy prices and new regulations. A look at the future of America's coal industry. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.